Welcome to Pause to Go, the podcast that's all about making the most of life's transitions from middle school through menopause. I'm your host, Bree Luck, joining you as we embark on a journey of self-discovery and questionable decisions. Get ready for heartfelt conversations, expert insights, and personal stories that'll have you laughing, crying, and saying, "Thank goodness I'm not alone." If you've lost your midlife crisis survival kit, we've got you covered. So join me, won't you? And together, we can pause to go. Today, we're going to venture into the topic that I have been trying to avoid. Because I am not a medical professional, and I am not a biology expert, and I am not super well-versed in any talk about the human body, except that after working on this podcast for 2 years, I have done a lot of reading and hearing about hormones. And I would just stop with that. I would just say I've done a lot of reading and hearing about hormones, except that every week I get a question like the listener question that I got this week, which was this. Bree, I think I'm going crazy, and I'm wondering if I should consider hormone therapy. But my doctor seems to think that it's not an issue. I'm 48. What should I do? It's this kind of question that gets me every time, because the first thing that I would do is to say, why is your doctor saying that it's not an issue? Yeah, the first thing that I would do is to consider the relationship with the doctor. By the way, if you go to the Pause to Go podcast website, which is pausetogopodcast.com, and you sign up for the mailing list on it, I promise I don't send emails that often. But if you sign up for the mailing list, then you automatically get my 5 tips for talking to your medical provider about perimenopause and menopause. And I strongly recommend signing up for the mailing list and downloading that document. Okay, but for now, for today, I'm going to attempt to give the most accurate description of how to navigate hormones in perimenopause, knowing that you all know that I am just a perimenopausal woman and that this just comes from my taking copious notes. And I will put all of my sources in the show notes so you can see where I've gotten my information. I will tell you the bulk of my information comes from the NAMS website, the North American Menopause Society, WebMD, right? Like I'm a hack, just like everybody else. Dr. Jen Gunter, who has written The Menopause Manifesto. I don't agree with everything that she says, but I can say this. She requires empirical evidence for everything that she recommends, and not everyone does. And frankly, I think that's okay. Like, I'm fine with looking into traditional medicines, looking into things that have not been rigorously tested by scientific community, by big pharma, but I don't feel comfortable giving you information that could be misinformation. And there is a lot of snake oil going around in the menopause community, just like there is in any other community, because when it comes down to it, people are trying to make a buck and people are preying on the fears and anxieties of other people. And we know that people who are in perimenopause are particularly prone to fear and anxiety, right? So I just want to say, because I know that some of you are going to come back to me and tell me the herbs that worked for you or the lifestyle changes that I haven't mentioned here that work for you. And that is great. And I'm all for it. I'm going to try to focus on what I can find, what I can back up, and what has some empirical evidence behind it so that I'm not inadvertently contributing to any misinformation. And also, if anything that I say sounds wrong, let me know. I want to make sure that we are supporting the health and well-being of perimenopausal and menopausal people, supporting the health and well-being of all people, actually. I think you get what I'm saying. So I have my notes up here on the screen, and I'm supposed to start by talking to you about gender bias and age bias and the intersectional bias that happens with gender and age. Honestly, I don't want to even go there right now. I don't even want to go because it's so big, it will take up the whole time. So I'm not going to talk about it. I'm not going to tell you about how we did not have consistent and rigorous clinical trials on people with uteruses and ovaries for a whole host of reasons, some of which are legitimate, some are not, until 1994. I'm not going to tell you about that. I'll tell you about that another time. But what we know is that this has left us somewhat in the dark, not completely, but somewhat in the dark in terms of fully understanding how the bodies of people with ovaries and uteruses work, how we respond to different medications, how we respond to all sorts of things, how we age, and we're still trying to catch up. We're still trying to catch up. So with that information, we'll move forward. All right. So I'll tell you what I can find. Let's talk first about hormones. The major hormones I'm going to talk about today are estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, FSH, and LH. And I'm going to talk about the roles that they play throughout life, how it changes during perimenopause, and where those hormones are produced before and after menopause. All right, so we're going to start with estrogen. So estrogen is interesting. There are three types of estrogen that we're going to talk about today. That's estradiol, estriol, and estrone. So estradiol is the most potent and prevalent form of estrogen in women of childbearing age. It's critical for the development and functioning of the reproductive organs, including the growth of the uterine lining during the menstrual cycle. It is critical for bone health. It helps to maintain bone density and strength and cardiovascular health. It influences our cholesterol levels and our arterial health. Our skin and hair, it makes our skin glowy and our hair strong and shiny. And for brain function, it impacts our mood, our cognitive function, and possibly the regulation of body temperature. The second form of estrogen is estriol. That's E3. It is most prominent during pregnancy. So estriol is a weaker form of estrogen, and it's primarily produced during pregnancy. It plays a role in fetal development. It helps to promote the growth and development of the fetus and prepares the body for delivery. And in breast tissue, it may play a role in the development of breast tissue during pregnancy. The third kind of estrogen is estrone. It becomes the dominant form of estrogen after menopause. So estrone appears to be involved in managing some of the symptoms of menopause, although it's weaker compared to estradiol. And estrone is produced in the adipose tissue, also known as fat tissue. So another thing to know is that these estrogens can convert into each other in the body. For example, estradiol can be converted into estrone and vice versa, depending on the body's needs, because the body is freaking amazing. Let's take a minute to talk about where estrogen is produced in the body. The primary source of estrogen, that's estradiol, estrone, and estriol, in premenopausal women is the ovaries. Estradiol is the predominant source of estrogen here. And then I already talked a little bit about it, but I'm going to reiterate it. Adipose fat tissue contributes to the production of estrogen, especially estrone, through the conversion of it's really hard for me to pronounce this word, but I'm going to do my best. And if somebody else has a better pronunciation, you can leave me a message. All right. Androstenedione. Androstenedione is produced in the adrenal gland. And then the adipose tissue, that fat tissue, helps to turn androstenedione into estrogen in the form of estrone. So, spoiler alert, that adipose tissue is going to be crucial for producing estrogen post-menopause. And estriol is produced by the placenta during pregnancy, which is good because that's the form of estrogen that's really needed during pregnancy. Then also other tissues, peripheral tissues like skin, muscle, and bone, they can also produce small amounts of estrogen. Let's talk a little bit about the changes in estrogen during perimenopause and menopause. So, estrogen levels. It is a myth that estrogen levels drop during perimenopause. What actually happens is that estrogen levels fluctuate wildly during perimenopause before eventually declining as menopause approaches. The decline in estrogen leads to typical menopausal symptoms like hot flashes, night sweats, mood swings, and vaginal dryness. So estrogen after menopause, let's talk about where estrogen is made after menopause. Adipose or fat tissue becomes the primary site for estrogen production, especially estrone, E1. And then the peripheral tissues can produce small amounts of estrogen through local synthesis. Okay, so it's important to note, even though ovarian estrogen production decreases significantly after menopause, the ovaries can still produce a small amount of hormones. So that's estrogen. Let's move on to the next hormone, progesterone. By the way, if you love this talk about hormones, bless you. But there is a fantastic episode of the Huberman Lab that came out. Well, it came out the week that I'm recording this. But you should go back and check it out if you are totally digging this conversation, because Dr. Natalie Crawford talks about the roles of each of these hormones in puberty, in the onset of puberty and pre-puberty, and times of fertility in the menstrual cycle, in pregnancy, in all everything, right? She goes through so much of this in great detail. So if you have 3 hours and 27 minutes that you want to listen to more talk about this and you aren't just interested in the menopausal, perimenopausal journey, go check it out and then let me know that you did, because then we can nerd out together. All right, back to progesterone. So progesterone is key for regulating the menstrual cycle and maintaining pregnancy. Okay, that's its role. And it also influences mood and can impact sleep quality. So in perimenopause and menopause, progesterone production tends to decrease as ovulation becomes less frequent. And some of the side effects of this can be mood changes, irregular menstrual cycles, and sleep disturbances. Let's talk about where progesterone is made. Simply, it's made in the ovaries, specifically the corpus luteum in the ovaries. The corpus luteum produces progesterone during the second half of the menstrual cycle. And then the adrenal glands. So the adrenal glands produce a small amount of progesterone. And then the placenta becomes a major source of progesterone during pregnancy because it helps to maintain the pregnancy. After menopause, progesterone is produced in the adrenal glands. They are the primary source of progesterone. Although it's worth noting that the overall levels of progesterone truly drop significantly. Next, we're going to talk about testosterone. This is what I'm being tested for right now, by the way. I just had my testosterone levels tested and they are low, 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 low. So now we're going to get my estrogen and progesterone tested, but we have to wait until it's the right time in my cycle to test it. So we'll see. All right. So the role of testosterone is important for sexual function and libido. It contributes to muscle mass and bone strength, and it affects energy levels and overall well-being. So my testosterone is low and I feel like crap. I'm just kidding. I actually feel fine. I would never have known that my testosterone was low, but you know, it's certainly worth checking out. Maybe my testosterone dropping is like that frog in boiling water metaphor. It's such a terrible metaphor. I keep using it. Anyway, the idea is that you put a frog in tepid water and the water gets to boiling and the frog doesn't even know that it's boiling water. Like the frog, you know, just sort of gets cooked. And maybe that's happened to me with testosterone. Maybe my testosterone has dropped so slowly over the years that I haven't even noticed it, but I didn't even realize how cruddy I feel because it's happened so slowly that it feels like normal. Anyway, back to testosterone. During perimenopause and menopause, testosterone levels gradually decline, affecting libido, muscle mass, and energy. So, before menopause, the ovaries produce testosterone, although in much, much smaller amounts compared to the estrogen and progesterone. The adrenal glands also produce testosterone, along with other androgens, which are male sex hormones. It's important to know that regardless of your gender, you are making male and female sex hormones. We're not all that different, y'all, except when it comes to medical research, then we are very different. Okay. And then peripheral tissues. So peripheral tissues can convert other androgens like androstenedione into testosterone. And after menopause, testosterone is made in the adrenal glands along with the other androgens. And despite the decrease in ovarian functions, the ovaries can still produce testosterone post-menopause. It's also really interesting. Both estrogen and testosterone can be synthesized in various peripheral tissues through the conversion of other precursors. That means that other body tissues can convert other hormones into estrogen and testosterone. And if I have that wrong, come at me and explain it better. While the production of these hormones, estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone, decrease significantly after menopause, they continue to play roles in various bodily functions. So understanding the shift in hormone production sites can help in managing the health and wellness in the postmenopausal phase. Okay, next, follicle-stimulating hormone and luteinizing hormone. That's FSH, follicle-stimulating hormone, and luteinizing hormone is called LH. So FSH, its primary function is to stimulate the growth of ovarian follicles. And LH triggers ovulation and supports the corpus luteum. It's clear what FSH and LH do in the body, right? They have everything to do with getting the ovarian follicles to grow and then triggering ovulation and supporting the corpus luteum. It's all about the egg. It's all about the egg. So in perimenopause and menopause, what actually happens is as the ovaries produce less estrogen, FSH and LH levels increase. So often, rising levels of these hormones, FSH and LH, are used as indicators of approaching menopause. Everything doesn't dry up. We get more of some things. So that is an overview of how our key sex hormones play out in our bodies pre-menopause, during perimenopause, and post-menopause. Now we're going to talk about when to seek medical advice. I want to start this part of the conversation by saying that perimenopause and menopause are not a disease. They are a transition in life. They are like puberty, right? It's a transition where your body is changing from one state to another state. And with that transition come various side effects, or you may call them symptoms, right? I don't like symptoms because it feels like a disease, but I'll occasionally call them symptoms too, because that's what the language has done to us. Anyway, you may decide that you have some side effects of perimenopause and menopause that are too much to deal with, that are too overwhelming, that are too uncomfortable, and you may want to seek medical interventions or lifestyle interventions or any kind of interventions. You may also have these side effects and decide that you don't need any interventions. Full disclosure, this week, I am not on any kind of hormone therapy. Right now, not any hormone therapy at all. I did try an estradiol cream for about a month, and it wasn't for me. That wasn't for me. But for other people, I'm sure it could be very, very helpful. But I just also want to say, it's good to know that you don't have to be utterly miserable during this time, and that there are interventions that can ease this period for you. But also, you don't have to jump on the hormone bandwagon just because it's trendy. It reminds me of childbirth, right? How there are certain trends in childbirth. And so when I was pregnant, a lot of people were inducing their labor. There were a lot of cesareans that were happening. And there was also a lot of stigma around getting a cesarean, because even though a lot of people were inducing their labor, people are getting pressured into cesareans. There was also this pressure to have a very natural, hippie childbirth. And that's certainly what I wanted. I really wanted a no medication childbirth. But I had a complicated pregnancy with my first child, and I ended up having a C-section. And then I tried for a VBAC with my second child, and I ended up having a C-section with her too. And you know what? It was fine. It was what I needed. And the biggest issue was actually my worry and concern about what I was supposed to be doing. All to say that this is your body, and you can decide whether or not you need more support in going through perimenopause. That said, anytime you have a condition that makes it difficult to go about your day-to-day life, that impacts the quality of your life, it is worth looking at different modalities of support. And today we're focusing on medical support as we talk about hormones and hormone imbalances. Let's talk now about the symptoms of hormone imbalances. Know that hormonal imbalances during perimenopause and menopause can manifest in various ways. And some of the key symptoms to be aware of include irregular periods. Again, that can be heavier or lighter, shorter or longer, skipping periods or having more periods. It can be pretty much anything. The big thing is that there's a change in the cycle. So if you had a cycle that was 28 days and now you've gone down to 21 days, or you've gone up to 43 days, it's worth noting and certainly telling your medical provider about that at some point so that everybody's aware of that. If you have gone for a year without a period and you begin to bleed again, talk to your doctor. Please go talk to your doctor, because it could be the indication of something else. Typically, menopause is 12 months after the final menstrual cycle with no cycle. Okay. So irregular periods. hot flashes and night sweats. Hot flashes are sudden feelings of heat, primarily in the upper body. Night sweats are hot flashes that happen at night. They're so clever. What a clever name. And as you can imagine, hormone fluctuations can cause sleep disturbances, mood changes, increased anxiety, irritability, episodes of depression, crying at every Hallmark card, crying at every commercial that comes on during the holiday season. Yeah, okay, like mood changes can be a sign of hormonal imbalance. Vaginal dryness. So this may show up as discomfort during intercourse or decreased vaginal lubrication, or it may just show up as being uncomfortable. For me, this actually showed up as recurring urinary tract infections. So having a less lubricated vaginal canal meant that more bacteria was getting in there and was causing some infections. So the first step for that was taking care of the actual infection. But then my doctor also prescribed estradiol for that. It did not work for me. What did work for me was a non-hormonal suppository, which is a hyaluronic. How do you pronounce that? It's what makes your face look so good. It's also good for vaginal dryness. Hyaluronic acid. That stuff is magic. More indicators of hormonal fluctuations are sleep problems. Difficulty falling or staying asleep. Again, that can be because of night sweats. It can also be anxiety, like sleep problems. Cognitive changes. Problems with memory or concentration. Cognitive changes are a typical side effect of hormonal imbalances. So other physical changes because of hormonal imbalances could include weight gain, reduced metabolism, thinning hair, and dry skin. There are many, many others, but these are some of the most common side effects. So all of these physical changes are normal. They are a normal part of going through major hormonal fluctuations. Knowing that those side effects are typical for people in perimenopause could be helpful, right? If they are bothering you, though, and if you want support, go to your doctor, go to your medical care provider. And here's the important part. Don't wait. Don't wait too long. Don't be like me. I'll tell you, I waited too long. I just went to my doctor and she fussed at me a little bit lovingly. She's wonderful, because I didn't come in to talk to her about a few things that have been going on with me for a while. I will say it is hard to get into a doctor. It is hard to get in with a doctor these days. I didn't not go for a lack of trying. I just didn't try that hard. Okay. But here's the importance of timely medical consultation. Number one, accurate diagnosis. Professional evaluation can help to differentiate between menopause-related symptoms and other medical conditions. Personalized treatment plans. A good healthcare provider can offer treatment options that are tailored to your individual symptoms and health history. No Google search is going to find that for you, right? Having someone who is working with you, who is on your team, can help you work with your individual makeup. Preventive health measures. Early intervention can help in managing symptoms and preventing long-term health issues like osteoporosis or cardiovascular disease. I'm being tested for both of those this month, by the way. Mental health support. Addressing mood swings, anxiety, or depression associated with hormonal changes can really help overall well-being. I can't stress it enough. Folks, you do not have to strong arm it through this. Exploring hormone therapy options. For some people, menopausal hormone therapy or hormone replacement therapy, or let's just call it hormone therapy, might be beneficial. And a healthcare provider can discuss the risks and benefits that are based on your personal health factors. Lifestyle modification guidance. An informed medical practitioner keep staying informed. Not everyone is. Can offer advice on diet, exercise, and lifestyle changes that can alleviate some of the side effects and improve quality of life. I'm actually going to stop there for today. And next week, I'm going to talk about insights into menopausal hormone therapy, to talking with your doctor, the do's and don'ts of hormone therapy, and finding and supporting and sharing stories. Again, I'm putting resources for all of this in the show notes for this week. So there are going to be some great resources for you to read, to look into, to find out more. Another thing you may want to do is to just start keeping track of things that you're going through. I'm going to recommend Notes, the Notes app on your phone. If I'm having unusual feelings, I try to note the date, any circumstances that I can remember about the feeling, like if I had some different food that day or tried a new detergent that day or whatever, right? I keep track of all of those things in my notes. So when I went into my doctor, even though I waited too long to go to my doctor, I had a pretty comprehensive list of not only the symptoms or side effects that I was experiencing, but also some contextualizations around it. And it really helped me to have a richer and more productive conversation with my doctor. If you have any questions or you want to reach out to me or tell me any aspect of your hormonal journey, I would love to hear it. I'm trying to collect three different kinds of stories right now. I'm looking for stories about major life changes, something that you did in midlife that was utterly transformative for you. So maybe that's a new relationship or finding spirituality in a different way or changing your career. Whatever it is, I want to hear it. Another thing I want to hear is if you completely blew up your life, if you had a life explode, if you completely made questionable decisions that you feel comfortable sharing, I want to hear them. I'm really curious about the questionable decisions that we make in life. And number three, and related to this episode, is tell me your health journey. How did your health change? How did your hormonal makeup change? What happened to your body in perimenopause and menopause? And if you had support or made lifestyle changes to support yourself on that journey, I want to know what they were. Share them with me. Thank you for joining me this week, and I'll talk to you next week. Thank you for listening to the Pause to Go podcast. Special thanks to Codebase Coworking and WTJU Radio for their support. This has been an Awkward Sage production.